The library used to be the place to go when you needed information. Now we have the internet for that. So what are libraries for? This hour, we'll answer that question. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, the modern library. The main libraries at all three of Iowa's Regents universities have gone through dramatic changes in recent years. We'll find out how the missions of the libraries have changed and why more students are turning to the library than ever before. Things have changed a lot at your local library, too. I'll talk with the director of the Cedar Rapids Public Library, one of the newest libraries in the state. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. When I think about a university library, I think about the long rows of bookshelves, the smell of books, and the hush of concentration. But times have changed, and so have libraries. This hour, the modern library. Later in the hour, I'll talk with the director of the Cedar Rapids Public Library, one of the newest libraries in the state. But we're going to start with university libraries, the main libraries at all three of Iowa's Regents universities. Cities have gone through dramatic changes in recent years. And with me today are representatives from all three of those universities. Chris Cox is Dean of Library Services at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Chris.
Morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Olivia Madison is here. She's professor and dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University. Hello, Olivia.
Hello. Great to be here.
Well,
thanks.
Thank you for being here. And John Culshaw is here. He is university librarian at the University of Iowa. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Charity.
And I wonder, was there something of a crisis for university libraries? Was there a point at which people weren't coming in the doors as much, and you had to think, wait, we need to do things different in the future? John, can you start us off with that?
I think that is the case. Many of our library facilities were dated and maybe weren't kept up quite as well as they should have been. And it was also a challenge for us to think about the sorts of spaces that our clientele needed. And especially in the last 5 or 10 years or so, I think many of our libraries, especially university libraries and public libraries too, have really undergone efforts to rejuvenate those spaces, make them more interesting to our patrons, and also provide the sorts of services and instruction that our students and patrons need in today's environment.
Well, and I think about when I was in college and the internet was new. And of course, now, then doing research on the internet was kind of unthinkable. Now, doing research on the internet, that's the first place where students start. Chris, did you find that with changes in technology, students didn't feel the need to come into the library as much?
Definitely. I mean, we're still seeing that. We're seeing that our services, our traditional services, are going down at alarming rates in terms of access to print resources or going and using the reference desk or checking items out. So we've been working on, as much as we can, moving things online. And those things, you know, do cost money, but they're quality resources that students and faculty need that can help to emphasize and help their research a lot.
Well, and Olivia, I spent many, many hours at the Parks Library when I was a student at Iowa State University. And I think about one of the first changes in a long line of changes that must have taken place at that library. And that is, of course, the first thing that you saw when you walked through the door was a giant room filled with card catalogs. And the card catalogs have been gone for a long time now, right?
They certainly have. They were beautiful oak furniture.
They were.
Just gorgeous. And spent a lot of money on them. But I will say my a previous dean, Warren Kuhn, was understood back in the mid-80s that things were going to change. And so even though he bought hundreds of beautiful cabinets for the card catalog for author, title, subject cards, he actually had, when that addition was built, it had laid in electrical outlets and wiring that were underneath those cabinets. And so when they left, we already had the infrastructure that we needed to replace them with what we used to call the scholar terminals.
Oh, wow.
But became the predecessor to our, you know, really robust e-library.
So the card catalogs are gone. I would be curious to know from each of you, what are some of the things that many of us would associate with university libraries that just are not there anymore? And then we'll talk about some of the great things that are there now. So other than card catalogs, John, what is gone?
Well, one of the things that's gone are the big, huge photocopy rooms. Back in the day, you can picture searching through a print index or abstracting service and finally locating that journal article that you needed and then going into this hot, kind of musty smelling photocopier room and, you know, putting your quarters or nickels in and figuring out how to make copies and then piling these books up. You know, today on the Iowa campus, our users are downloading more than 11,000 journal articles every single day from our electronic resources. And just imagine what that would be like in a photocopy room today.
Chris, what else is gone?
In many cases, the reference collection is gone, or it's in a different format. A lot of the reference materials we get now are online, and a lot of the questions that used to be answered by those collections are freely available on the internet. And those collections, in many ways, were used by our librarians, so they're changing and morphing into different things that allow us to offer the service we need to students.
Do you have any encyclopedias in the building anymore?
We do. We do have encyclopedias. Most of them are older at this point. We don't continue to buy many of them anymore, but there are specific – there are like ones – aimed at certain fields that are still well used, and so we keep those.
Olivia, anything we've missed? Any other items that are just gone?
Well, another piece that's gone is the reasons that individuals, or particularly students and faculty, would go to our circulation desk. Now, so much of that is done electronically through our e-library. You can renew books unless someone else has put, in quotes, a hold on it, because that someone else wants it. And the whole concept of coming to do really core basic business of is just gone. And the other place that used to be the hottest place in our library was our periodical room, when the newest journal issues would come out, and there would be wait lists for seeing the latest issue of Brain Research, for example. And so, the periodical room now is heavily used, but it's used as a quiet place. And so it's a place where everybody knows if they go there, they can have concentrated time. It's a beautiful two-story room with our presidential portraits and a wonderful Chinese art collection that is rotating from the University Museum. So as we think about what that room used to be, it's now much more for private study and and doing your work, and no cell phones allowed.
Tell me how you provide that service now to students and faculty at the university, because of course periodicals are something that a lot of people turn to university libraries for. We think about all of these journals where all of these scientific articles are published, and if you've ever looked at the price tag on those journals, it's enough to make you feel a little queasy if you think about actually getting a subscription yourself. So how does the library, Olivia, now provide that information to students and faculty?
Well, we do a better job than we ever used to. Doing research is so much more straightforward now. And what could have taken months and months of work can be done now just in a matter of a half a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. About 95% of our journal collection subscriptions, our new titles, are available only electronically. So if you wanted to come into the library to use that collection, you would have to go to one of our computer workstations. You know, it's not going to be on our shelves.
Right.
And the fact that you can search huge collections of all sorts of, hundreds and thousands of journals at one point, if you want to, depending upon how you do the search, you know, that would have taken – it's impossible to fathom how much it would take to have been able to search that. And one of our concerns is that students and faculty don't necessarily know they're using our library when they go out to the web and they search and they get hits on, retrieve articles that they might be looking for, and they can have full access to it. That's only because they're using an authenticated access mode. And when students in particular leave Iowa State, they all of a sudden realize they don't have access to huge amounts of literature, particularly the journal literature in our e-book collection that they did as a student.
So students are using the library and they don't even know it.
Absolutely.
Well, and John, I see you nodding your head, and you mentioned that number of how many articles are downloaded from the University of Iowa every day?
Every day.
Every day. So, I mean, you're providing the same service.
We're providing the same service. I think another really critical service for us today is the concept of embedded librarians. And an embedded librarian is one of our subject specialist librarians. We have almost 40 of them who will sometimes work and even have an office right in an academic department. So whether it's education or psychology or nursing, it works well in the sciences, health sciences, even the humanities. So the librarians are really integrated into the research process and are there for the faculty members when they're looking for a piece of information or when they're trying to figure out, how do I explain this to my students in the classroom? The librarians are there and are a partner in both research and instruction.
And so they're specialists in a specific subject.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Absolutely.
Chris, do you have anything you want to add to this?
Well, what I would say, another thing that's changed in many ways is that there's more of an emphasis on unique materials, the things in our special collections and archives, the things in, for example, the UNI Museums now reports through the libraries. We have a variety of artifacts that are available to students to look at, to view. And so as a result, because a lot of the information that we used to be able to have to store in our libraries is now available in many other ways, electronically and on your desktop, we're focusing on those unique materials that either are rare or items that perhaps are published on the campus, student and faculty research, that we can then provide back to the campus and preserve and protect.
Well, and is this part of, in some ways, justifying the investment in the library? As the library changes, and you know that many people can access all of this information electronically, is the mission of the library changing because you have to compete with these other departments at the university?
Well, I wouldn't say it's changing. I mean, I would say it's changing, but it hasn't gone away. I mean, we've always been about providing information to support the learning and scholarship missions of the university. I think what's happening, as John mentioned, is that we're becoming more integrated into what's going on in terms of learning outcomes of the campus. So instead of a librarian waiting at a reference desk waiting for that question, now we're out working directly with the faculty and the students to help them to evaluate the information they get, because there's a lot of it out there, and to be able to understand it and integrate it into their research and present it back if it's a video or whatever format or final product it ends up being.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We're going to return to this specific subject because I know that both Olivia and John have more to say on that subject as well. And we'll talk about some of the spaces that are new in the library, places where students and faculty gather and do all kinds of interesting things in these library buildings. We'll continue our conversation about the modern libraries with a focus on research libraries. With me, Chris Cox, Dean of Library Services at the University of Northern Iowa, John Culshaw, University Librarian at the University of Iowa, and Olivia Madison, Professor and Dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University. And we want to hear from you. How has how you use the library changed? Let us know. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about modern libraries, and right now we're focusing on research libraries, the libraries at the three Regents Universities in the state of Iowa. And you are welcome to join the conversation as well. How has your use of the library evolved? Is there something that you can do at one of these libraries that you never dreamed you'd be able to do at a library? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Is there something you wish you could do at the library that you can't yet, that you hope to do in the future? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Olivia Madison is here. She's professor and dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University. Chris Cox is dean of library services at the University of Northern Iowa. And John Culshaw is university librarian at the University of Iowa. And I want to return to a conversation we were just starting to have right before the break about really how the rest of the university sees the library. Because as the role of the library has changed, as we sort of went through this crisis where people weren't coming through the door as much, John, do you feel like you have to work harder to justify investment in the library than perhaps you would have had two decades ago?
I think in some ways we do. We're in a new era of really needing to prove our return on investment and talk about how people are using our resources, do some assessment of our instructional programs, do assessment of our spaces, and not so much work harder, but work smarter and use the data that we have to show how important the library is to students and faculty.
How about you, Olivia?
Well, we used to just assume everybody knew the value of the library. And as John said, we're now competing within a very much more widely diffused era of information and what people expect, and particularly our students expect when they come to a campus. I mean, when I was an undergraduate student, to think that we would be investing in really state-of-the-art rec centers for our students, which is something that students really want and need in terms of their quality of life on campus. We're blessed with at Parks Library in that the count of people coming into our building actually has not changed. It had a large dip, but we're back now to basically around 2 million people coming into the building each year, and that's where we were in 2002.
Well, so when was the biggest dip?
The dip would have been probably around 2004, 2005, 2006, and it dropped about 300,000-400,000 students.
Interesting.
Part of the dip really had less to do with students, is my guess. It had more to do with faculty because we were then starting to provide our journals electronically so that they did not have a need to come into the library.
Interesting.
So I would say the largest dip was within our faculty and graduate student use and less so with our perhaps less so with our undergraduates.
And Chris, did I hear you trying to jump in there?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the things that your libraries have today that they didn't have before. We talked about some of the things that are no longer in libraries. But, of course, a lot of us think about libraries as kind of a hushed space where people go to study and to read and to find information. And I know that there is certainly that element that is still available. But now, all of you have cafes in your libraries?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we're getting one in the fall.
All right. So, John, why have a cafe in a university research library?
Well, people come and study in people's schedules are different today than they were in the past. You know, we used to maybe study during the day and then go home in the evening. Our students today are working until midnight, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and they multitask in a different way. So folks like to have a coffee or a drink alongside of when they're working. It's part of the Starbucks culture, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's how it is out in society, and people want to work the same way in libraries today.
So let's say they actually have a physical book and want to read a physical book, not just work on their computers. Can they take books into the library or into the cafe, or do they need to check them out? Is it kind of a separate structure?
They can take drinks into the library and vice versa. So people can go both ways.
All right. And Olivia?
Absolutely. Our cafe doesn't have that much seating, so we really do expect students to take the food out. We have a good arrangement with ISU Dining in terms of they operate our cafe. And we purposefully only serve basically outside of warm tea, you know, hot drinks, cold food. And so, you know, sandwiches and bagels and muffins, et cetera. But it's so that we don't have pizzas plates of spaghetti being sold
in
the cafe.
Right, you don't have sauce and grease dripping into it.
Right. So, but the other cafes on campus certainly have a more diverse menu than what we do. I've also found that within libraries is that within research libraries in general, is that the understanding of embedding technology into how students learn and collaborate with each other. And so there's much more technology that used to be in hushed areas of, you know, a very kind of boring lab into technology that's spread throughout the building in terms of, you know, high-end monitors that students can cluster around and all use the same screen and collaborate on projects and whatever. So the library is not only bringing information but vehicles that they can then use technology to share what they learn and share it with others.
Well, and Chris, I know your cafe is coming, so that'll further change your library. But do you have designated quiet spaces? Is the library a louder place than it used to be?
It's a louder place, but we do have our library's four floors. So the fourth floor and even the first floor are both still quiet. Spaces are relatively quiet. I mean, in many ways, it's you're kind of figuring out how to present an atmosphere that shows what you want students or faculty to do in that space. So our main floor is a louder, more activity-based floor. So we have lots of group study, lots of soft seating. We have all our services on that floor. We have partners available. We have programs. And then as you move up the library, up those floors, you see there's more unique collections. And then our main collection floor, which is the fourth floor, ends up being relatively quiet. And that's where people would go to do what they traditionally would have done in a library or still do.
Well, and Olivia, you alluded to some of the specialized technologies that students mm-hmm. and faculty can access at libraries. And I would love to get an example from each of you. John, what is one of the more specialized technologies that you can offer at the library?
Well, in our new Learning Commons, which opened at the beginning of last fall semester, it's a 37,000 square foot state-of-the-art facility. One of the spaces that amaze me the most are our group spaces. We have 18 group rooms in that space, and it's very easy for students to plug a laptop or two into a big screen monitor that's embedded in the wall. They can write with markers on all the surfaces. All of them are writable. And when I see those rooms, it just fascinates me to see the diversity as I'm walking by those spaces. They're all glass walls. And you'll see students conjugating Spanish verbs in one room. You'll see somebody doing a math problem in another room. And then maybe somebody sketching out a PowerPoint presentation in one of the other rooms. And I think it really sort of engages students to think of some of the serendipity of discovery and encourages them to think about what else is going on in the room. It's really amazing to me. And all of that is by using lots of technology in the spaces.
And if I was a student and sort of thought, oh, you know what? I'd like to get my study group together this afternoon. Let's go into one of these rooms. I mean, can you do that spontaneously, or are all of these rooms booked pretty far in advance?
You can do both, but they're booked a lot. Over the course of the first year of operation, we had 28,000 reservations.
Wow.
For our 18 group rooms. So they were used a lot. But it's very easy to see. Each room has a tablet mounted on the wall outside. And if it's available, it's green. If it's not available, it's red. They can also book things online. So it's possible to plan ahead.
And Chris, can you give me an example of technology that's available at the library that may not be available elsewhere?
Well, we have what's called a digital media hub as part of our Learning Commons. And what that allows students to do is it provides access to the software and hardware they need to be able to create a video or create an audio file or edit a graphic, something like that. As part of that, we have peer students that are trained to help them, as well as we have different recording areas where students can go in and use green screen technology to be able to actually shoot video, put themselves with a different background, and then create actually high-quality videos without needing a huge studio to be able to do it.
Well, so it's beyond being able to check out some of this equipment, which I know libraries have done for a long time, to actually creating, or having a sort of a media space within the library.
Exactly. Being able to have a creation space as well as assistance.
Interesting. Olivia?
Everything that's been said, we also provide, so I don't want to do much repetition. But we do have one space that hasn't been described, and it's sort of like the green screen technology that Chris was talking about. But we have what we call a presentation room in which they can tape themselves, do PowerPoints. There's some seating area that they can bring friends in or tutors in or whoever they might want to critique their presentation. And then they can walk away with a copy of it and kind of practice what they're going to be presenting. They can also use it in practicing for an interview, for example, so it's not necessarily just research. But it's a simple room in many respects. It's not that large, but it's really used with great enthusiasm by those who have discovered it.
We are talking about modern libraries this hour, and we're focusing on research libraries right now. We'll turn to the Cedar Rapids Public Library in just a few minutes and also talk about other public libraries around the state. If you would like to join our conversation, please do. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. iowastateuniversity.org. With me this hour, Olivia Madison from Iowa State University, Chris Cox from the University of Northern Iowa, and John Culshaw from the University of Iowa. John, has there been something that students have used the library for that has surprised you? Like an unanticipated use beyond napping?
Well, I think it's really the use of these group rooms. I think the other thing that students really are discovering are our special collections. And the special collections that all of us have in each of our libraries really sort of distinguish one another from each library. And I think it's a way to give students a very different experience and to get them thinking differently about information and to understand that everything is not necessarily about the internet and being online. And, you know, we're able to attract students to special collections through our DIY history project, where we encourage people to transcribe things like historical diaries and other documents, as well as some of the really special things that we have in special collections, like a page of the Gutenberg Bible or the very first printing of The Tale of Peter Rabbit. People think differently about things when they hold something like that in their hands.
Well, and I remember I've spent a lot of time, actually only in two of these three libraries, but I grew up in Cedar Falls, so I spent a lot of time at the University of Northern Iowa Library, and then I went to school in Ames, and I spent a lot of time at that library, and I just love libraries. But I think about the special collections as sort of being in the basement, gated off from some of the other collections. Have the changes in the libraries allowed you to really showcase your special collections a little bit more, Olivia?
Well, one of the things we've been doing is digitizing special collections materials, and so that anywhere, anyone, anywhere can start understanding what we have in that collection. And we do it two ways. One is to basically treat it as what we used to think of as an exhibit, some important pieces of a larger collection that, whether they're diaries from or samples of pages from a Civil War diary, for example, that we may not digitize the whole diary collection that we have, but to give an idea of what a Civil War diary might entail. To then encourage people to say, we have this and you can find more. The other way of approaching digital special collections materials is also digitizing much more completely areas of interest, and whether they're manuscripts or book collections that we of a certain type of material that we think would have broad use. Another area that we have, which is tied, it isn't necessarily tied to special collections, but it's another way of bringing our materials out to the broader public so that they don't necessarily have to come into the Parks Library or the Design Reading Room or the Vet Med Library, is what we refer to as our digital repository. And that's a place that we have, that's just been in operation for about 2 years with almost 2 million downloads of the content. Now, one piece of it that I wanted to mention is that we now have all of our dissertations back to 1916 and our master's theses going back to 2006 in that repository. And anyone in the state of Iowa has access to the full text of those theses and dissertations. And they are now top downloaded material within our repository. And what's so fascinating about it, they used to be books that were shelved, you know, the collections in our special collections, some of them then also typically a duplicate in our main collection. And they're getting used in ways they never were used before.
Interesting. And before we get to the break, I want to take Caroline from Iowa City. Hello, Caroline.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about the contributions of the embedded librarians and how they have helped students and faculty work with these amazing libraries that are virtually all over the world with access through the internet. I am a recently retired professor in the College of Education at the University of Iowa, and we have had this amazing embedded librarian who works with classes. She will teach classes. She will work individually with students and faculty to access material electronically and, more importantly, to evaluate the quality of materials that students are calling research. I would like to make a testimonial to Dottie is retiring at the end of next week, and she has just been an invaluable resource to us in the College of Education.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, I really applaud the library faculty for going to this embedded librarian concept, because our young people and many of us haven't appreciated or understood how to go through materials through all of the internet resources in thoughtful, systematic ways. And the embedded librarians have really provided this very important link.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing that. We're running out of time. We have to get to the break. And John, I'll let you weigh in on that when we get back about the embedded librarians. And you can join our conversation as well, 866-780-9100. We're going to broaden our conversation to include local public libraries in a moment, but we'll continue taking questions and talking about research libraries as well. With me, John Culshaw, University Librarian at the University of Iowa, Olivia Madison, Professor and Dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University, and Chris Cox, Dean of Library Services at the University of Northern Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about modern libraries. And so far this hour, we've been focusing on research libraries. Chris Cox is here. He's Dean of Library Services at the University of Northern Iowa. Olivia Madison is Professor and Dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University. And John Culshaw is University Librarian at the University of Iowa. Before we turn to public libraries, local public libraries, and broaden the conversation a little bit, I want to give you, John, an opportunity to respond to Carolyn, our caller, who was talking about the embedded librarian program at the University of Iowa. And, you know, earlier in the hour when I was listening to all of you talk about the reference desk being a place where people don't visit as often and the reference collection being basically gone in some of these libraries, I was feeling a little sad because I was thinking about the librarians who have helped so many people at those desks. But it sounds like being a librarian in a modern library is a pretty exciting thing.
I think it is an exciting thing. And, you know, Carolyn really hit the nail on the head. And Dottie is indeed one of our finest librarians, and we're really going to miss her when she retires next week. And if I could think of anyone who really is the epitome or the model of the embedded librarian, Dottie Person is it. And not only does she interface with the faculty, but she interfaces with me, and she lets me know what's going on in that college. And it's a great conduit of information, and it really helps us to provide the best services we can to that faculty. So hear, hear to Carolyn for raising Dottie's name in today's conversation.
Now, of course, those of us who are affiliated with universities probably turn to university libraries, but then those of us who are not, we turn to our local public libraries. And things are changing a lot in public libraries as well. And with me is the new director of the Cedar Rapids Public Library, Dara Schmidt. Welcome, Dara.
Thank you.
And this is your fourth day on the job?
It is, in fact, yes.
You're very, very new. And of course, most of us know that in 2008, the Cedar Rapids Public Library was flooded. But in rebuilding, the library had an opportunity to become a truly modern space to serve the people of Cedar Rapids. And Dara, can you give us sort of an overview of the Cedar Rapids Public Library? I know that this is a really remarkable building and a very interesting space.
It absolutely is a remarkable building, and it's a very interesting space because it was designed to be that library of the future. And what that means is it's a library that is flexible and open and can be constantly changing. So we've been in the building for almost a year. It'll be a year next month. And so, you know, now is the time to look at all of those ideas we had and go, and then how can we respond to how people are really using it. But the technology is absolutely as cutting edge as we can make it. We have tablets that adults and children can check out and take out of the building. We have this amazing large surface tablet in our children's area where there's always a bunch of kids just crowded around it and using it together. And, you know, so being as modern as possible in the design so that everything is open and welcoming, and you walk in and get a wow factor, but then you also settle into this place that you know is for you. And another great thing about the design of the new library is the community space and the meeting room space. And it is booked over 80% of the time. We have 10,000 people a month using the public meeting space. And so it's this true space of community and civic engagement in a way. I think that there really is nothing else in the city that's quite like that.
Well, and one of the things that makes the building unique, it's a LEED certified building, and
platinum.
It has platinum, and it also has a green roof. So the building itself is modern technology.
Absolutely. And so the building has the green roof that all of the rainwater cycles through, and we've gotten quite a bit of rain the last little bit. And so up to about an inch and a half, if I believe I'm remembering correctly, will actually stay there on the roof and cycle through and feed all of those plants. And then we also have two large cisterns that we're collecting the rest of the rainwater to use on those dry, sunny days when we can get them.
Now, we've talked about the cafes and the research libraries. You also have a cafe in
Absolutely.
Your library. And how integrated is that into the library? I've been to public libraries where they're kind of separate. I've been to other places where they're more integrated.
It's one of the first things you see when you walk in. You walk into this big open space, and the cafe is right there. The seating sort of bleeds out into the library. But then, just as everyone else was saying, you know, the library is such a big open place that you get your food from the cafe, and you can go anywhere in the library. You can sit anywhere that you're comfortable. You know, comfortable seating all over the place is another really important thing. And I think a public or a university library, you know, people want to sit down with their laptop and with their coffee and be in a spot that works for them. And so those, you know, traditional everybody has to sit at a desk, or those, you know, the study carrels with the edges on the sides, you know, where you were sort of in your own little world. That's just not what you see at libraries anymore.
Well, you even have treadmill desks
available.
Yes,
there are three treadmill desks. And so, you know, if you want to just take a walk and have a moment to clear your head while you're working, you can look out the window and take a walk at the library.
You also have a large auditorium in the library. What is the intention with that?
So the Whipple Auditorium is used, of course, for library programming. We're having a movie in there today. But then other days, a couple of days ago, there was just a public group who used it for a kid's ballet recital. And there have been a lot of city and county meetings that take place there. And so, you know, it's both an actual auditorium for entertainment space, but it's also a beautiful meeting space. And then, as you're talking about modern and cutting edge, all of the glass in that room automatically changes, you know, so you can make the whole beautiful glass wall that looks out onto a park bright, sunny. You can change all of the glass with a switch and it turns into dark, dark glass, and so that you can, you know, show a movie in that same room. So
now, speaking of showing a movie at the library, mm-hmm. and, you know, I know that you have programs for kids to come in and participate in gaming, that kind of thing. I think about the libraries that I spent time in when I was a kid, and all the programs were basically about books.
Yes.
So there are a lot of other reasons that kids and people come into libraries now. How does that fit into the mission of the modern library? Why have kids come in and do Minecraft?
Well, because there's a lot of research that shows that video games, you know, the way that your brain works when you're playing a game, you're really learning things. And something like Minecraft, it's a collaborative game. And so you're working together and, you know, you're learning cause and effect and all of those things. But I mean, in general, I think that, and you're reading things on the screen. So you're still reading, which is important. But, you know, like reading is where you start. And then if you read and then you start like thinking about what you read, or you actually do something with what you've read, then you can have these life-changing experiences that maybe the library was the beginning of that for you. So, you know, reading is still very, very important. Like, literacy is part of our mission, but there's a lot of more to literacy than just reading a book.
All right, we are talking about modern libraries this hour on Talk of Iowa, and with me I have Chris Cox from the University of Northern Iowa, Olivia Madison from Iowa State University, John Kulshaw from the University of Iowa, and Dara Schmidt, who is director of the Cedar Rapids Public Library. And you're welcome to join join the conversation. We have a lot of people who want to do just that. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we were talking about the Embedded Librarian Program. We have this tweet from Dan. My colleagues and I at Grandview University have had great success with the Embedded Librarian model. And Kathy tweeted that some high school librarians are embedded in some classrooms as well. So that seems to be something that is gaining a lot of popularity. This is a question from Shirley. How can a non-student gain access to university libraries? And Chris, can you address that?
For our library, we actually used to charge the public $40 a year to use the library, and now we let them come in for free. So they can take a book out. They can use our electronic databases. I mean, one of the challenges we have is all the electronic journals that we have are only accessible on campus or off campus to people who are part of the university community. So those are a bit restricted, but you can still come and use them. You can use our facilities. You can study. You can ask a librarian any question you want. So ours is fully open to the public. We hope they'll come in.
And Olivia?
Same with us. We're a land-grant institution, so we have as part of our university mission the fact that we serve the entire state of Iowa. And so, again, we have the same restrictions electronically for many of our paid subscriptions for journals and other serials. But in terms of coming into our building, anyone can come in and use our collections, whether they're electronic or the rest of our collections, whether they're books or film, music, etc.
Okay.
And we do charge a very slight user fee card if someone wants to check material out to take it out of the building.
All right. And John, what's your policy?
Our situation is similar to Iowa State's. We do have a public borrower's card available to folks, but everything is available free and openly for folks who come into the building. And in fact, we are the regional federal depository library, meaning we have copies of print and electronic U.S. government documents that are available. In fact, our library is the one of two 2014 federal depository libraries of the year, something that we're very proud of. And we do provide those services to patrons as well.
All right. Jim is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Jim.
Yes.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm a graduate of the Library of take two. I'm a graduate of the University of Iowa Library and Information Science School.
Okay.
Two questions. One is, I'm wondering if it's still around, if the University of Iowa still does have a library school. And the second is, I'd like to talk about how I and my girlfriend got locked in the library overnight one Friday night when I was showing her how to use an online research system that doesn't even exist anymore.
And did you have to stay the entire night?
Well, no. Actually, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we made our way to the basement, figured out we couldn't get out that way, so we finally just called campus security and they let us out.
I mean, you probably didn't have a cell phone on you back then. Or did you?
Oh, boy.
Guess not.
No, young fella, we didn't have those things. Seriously, we still had the card catalog at the university at the
right
time, although everything was transitioning to the online services, which is what I was focusing on.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for sharing that. And
I also do volunteer work now for the public library in Dubuque. I just put together, or I'm putting together, a brief how-to because it started out to be brief. We just moved to a new online catalog, and what was supposed to be like a 2 or 3 page update is now turning into 6, 8, 9 pages of all these things you can do with the new online catalog.
Oh, great. Well, Jim, thank you so much for your call. And so first, his first question about the School of Library Sciences.
Absolutely. The School of Library and Information Sciences still is a program in the graduate college at the University of Iowa. They are located still in the main library here in Iowa City. And we at the university libraries and I'm sure public libraries and other libraries in the state provide lots of internship opportunities and practicum opportunities for the students that are enrolled in that program. But it's absolutely still around.
Well, and as to the hours of the library, you mentioned earlier that students work a little bit differently now than they used to. What are the hours of the University of Iowa Library?
How much? Well, During the academic year, our Learning Commons facility is open 24 hours a day, 5 days a week.
All right. So Jim could no longer get locked in the library.
Not in the Learning Commons, right. At least.
All right. Cheryl is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'd like to talk about how the library is such a social hub in Des Moines and in West Des Moines and Urbandale and surrounding areas, because I've used all of those libraries. And when my grandson was younger, his parents were divorced, and we would go to the library. It was safe. It was weather protected. He'd be introduced to books because we're avid readers. And it was really important for his parents that there was a place that we could go that was free, because finances were an issue.
I think that's important for a lot of families.
Right. And the weather protected, you know, in the winter, it was warm, and in the summer, it's air conditioned, and all of that's wonderful. And there was, of course, also there were the reading groups for the young children, and Des Moines has special computers for young and teenagers and adults, so for everyone to use. And then my grandson would do homework there. He's in high school now.
That's great, but, Cheryl. We're running out of time. So, did you have a question?
The thing of it is, they're closed on Saturdays and Sundays during the summer because, I guess, budget constraints, and that's really sad. But I really don't have a question. It's that you use the...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I just hit the wrong button. I did not intend to do that. I apologize. But so the question of hours and access, let me ask you, Dara, I know that, of course, all libraries have different constraints as far as the hours that they are open and can be accessible. Many libraries are open on Saturdays and Sundays, but that has to be a challenge.
It is. Cedar Rapids Public Library is open on Saturdays and Sundays, so we're open 7 days a week. But it is, you know, it's budget constraints, it's staffing constraints, and so every library is a little bit different. But, you know, we try to offer as much quality of service with the quantity of service. And so you have to weigh both of those things when making those decisions.
Well, and we are out of time, but if there's one thing on your wish list that you wish that your library could have or could afford to have as far as technology goes, John, do you have something?
I think it would be a lot of fun to have a 3D printer in the library. Some libraries are experimenting with that, and it's sort of the new wave of creation, and it would just be another way for folks to produce a different sort of information in the library.
Yeah, very cool. John Culshaw, University Librarian at the University of Iowa. Thank you. Chris, is there one thing quickly?
Well, we've talked about the same thing that Dara has, having some exercise equipment in the library, for the same reason we have the cafe. People in there a long time. They need a little break before they go back to their research.
All right. And Olivia?
I'd say the 3D printer would be fantastic, moving our students along into kind of the world of the virtual reality.
All right.
And how we might be able to do that.
Olivia Madison is professor and dean of Parks Library at Iowa State University. Chris Cox is dean of library services at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you both. And Dara Schmidt is director of the Cedar Rapids Public Library. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking about modern libraries this hour on Talk of Iowa. With me now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. What's coming up at noon today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. We're going to compare the Vietnam War and the Iraq War. Now, Americans say that both wars weren't worth it. So we're going to talk with two Iowa combat veterans of both wars. Also, Dennis Goldford of Drake University to offer public opinion and politics of both wars. Should be an interesting hour over the noon hour.
All right, thanks a lot, Ben Kiefer. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.